The headlines, the Secretary General of the Lebanese Hezbollah movement blasts the U.S. for continuing to put economic pressure on Lebanon by blocking investments in the country. The European Union warns the Eurozone is expected to fall into recession this winter as soaring energy prices take their toll on the continent. The Italian government's new policy on migrants is sparking tensions, with the country's prime minister hitting back at France's tough criticism. Our top story for this half hour, Lebanon's Hezbollah says the resistance movement is not concerned about the outcome of recent Israeli and U.S. elections, as the polls don't affect the policy of Washington and Tel Aviv toward Beirut. Hezbollah's Secretary General says all Israeli parties are similar in their crimes and all Israeli regimes are criminal. Sayed Hassan Nasrallah says he doesn't believe that there will be a withdrawal from or cancellation of the U.S.-brokered maritime deal between Lebanon and Israel now that former Israeli Premier Benjamin Netanyahu is set to return to power. Nasrallah argued that the real guarantor of the deal is the power of Lebanon's army, people, and resistance, and this power still exists. Referring to the U.S. midterm congressional elections, Nasrallah said the U.S. policy toward Lebanon doesn't depend on which party is in power.
The U.S. objectives are one, maybe they might change when it comes to how they lie, how pretentious they are, how, or their methods or their ways, or but in the essence, in their principles, they are fixed. And in, are the people of this region, we saw from none of these U.S. administration, from this great Satan, we saw only wars, we saw authority, we saw hegemony, we saw occupation.
Nasrallah said the U.S. is responsible for all Israeli crimes against nations in West Asia, as it was the U.S. who, quote, brought the curse of Israel to the region. He also blamed the U.S. for infesting Lebanon with Takfiri terrorists and creating an economic and political crisis in the Arab country. He said the U.S. continues to impose a siege on Lebanon by forbidding investment or economic aid to the country and relentlessly interferes in the political processes in Lebanon. Nasrallah also touched on the resistance campaign against Israel, saying the regime has banked on the exhaustion of Palestinians, but young Palestinians have surprised the enemy with their attacks on Israeli forces. He said Israel had also bet on the exhaustion of the Lebanese people in the 1980s when it attacked Lebanon, but it was later surprised by the people's resistance. The European Commission projects rather bleak outlook for the Eurozone, sounding the alarm about a looming recession amid rising inflation and energy prices. The EU's executive arm says increased market uncertainty and soaring prices are expected to tip the Eurozone into recession in the last 3 months of 2022. The forecast came as the Commission sharply raised its predictions for inflation in this year and the next. The EU's Economy Commissioner Paolo Gentiloni says soaring energy prices and rampant inflation are now taking their toll.
The economic situation has deteriorated markedly, and we are heading into two quarters of contraction. This technical recession is said to be broad-based across demand components, but also across countries, with a majority of member states experiencing two consecutive quarters of contraction.
Gentiloni also said the Eurozone's economy is going to keep shrinking until the spring. Meanwhile, the UK is also gripped by economic hardship. Britain's economy shrank by 0.2% between July and September. The contraction adds to fears that the country's economy is teetering on the brink of a long-term recession. Europe is reeling from the economic shockwaves of the war in Ukraine. The war has fueled rising energy costs, hitting the wallets of consumers around the continent. Protests and strikes have erupted in several European countries over deteriorating working conditions and the rising costs of living. Nurses across Britain have decided to go on strike later this year over pay, and Paris commuters have been facing travel chaos as metro workers staged a strike to demand higher pay and job security. And in Greece, protesters filled the streets demanding higher wages to keep pace with spiraling inflation.
As the war drags on in Ukraine, the gloomy economic outlook continues to trigger protests across Europe. Demonstrators in several European countries have hit the streets for pay rises and better working conditions. In the UK, tens of thousands of nurses will go on a strike for the first time, demanding better pay as the cost of living soars. The industrial action would begin before the end of the year, after the first vote on strike action in its 106-year-old history. Unions say that the salaries of nurses have dropped by up to 20% in real terms over the last 10 years. That has left members struggling to feed their families and to pay their bills. Hundreds of workers at London's Heathrow Airport will walk out in the run-up to the Soccer World Cup this month over demands for better pay. These 700 workers will strike for 3 days starting from November 18th. In Greece, workers have held a 24-hour general strike, which has seen thousands of protesters march to the streets of Athens and the northern city of Thessaloniki. Clashes also erupted between protesters and police forces. And the French capital, Paris, commuters have faced transport delays. As metro workers called a major one-day pay strike, unions have staged strikes across several sectors in recent weeks, seeking pay hikes or increased hiring as spiraling energy costs feed into widespread inflation.
The protests come amid a gloomy economic outlook for the Eurozone. The International Monetary Fund has predicted Europe's advanced economies will face recession next year. The Eurozone has been battling against surging inflation for about a year, with Russia's war in Ukraine accentuating those inflationary pressures.
The protests come amid a gloomy outlook in Europe as Russia's war in Ukraine takes a rising toll on Europe's economies. The International Monetary Fund has predicted that Europe's advanced economies will grow by just 0.6% next year. It also says that this winter, more than half of the countries in the euro area will experience technical recessions. Germany, which is considered EU's biggest economy, is also expected to go into a recession in the next year.
The German economy has been built on cheap energy, cheap gas from Russia, and this business model is over. So Germany has to fasten to produce renewable energy and then go back on track with its business model. But this will take a couple of years.
Technically, a recession means that at least two consecutive quarters of shrinking output will occur. Next year, Europe's output and income will be nearly half a trillion euros lower as compared to the IMF's pre-war forecasts.
We have downgraded three times since October last year our growth projections. Last time we brought 22 to 3.2% growth, and for 23 projections was 2.9%. We will see, we always come around the annual meetings with our world economic outlook, that we are further downgrading our growth projections for next year.
The Eurozone has been battling against surging inflation for about a year. Inflation hit a historic high of 10.7% last month. Given the historic levels of inflation, the European Central Bank has announced three rate hikes this year, bringing the main rate from negative territory to 1.5% currently. Soaring costs with energy have been the main driver of higher inflation across the Eurozone.
Ukrainian troops are slowly and cautiously entering the city of Kherson in the south of the country after the withdrawal of Russian forces. The Ukrainian Defense Ministry has confirmed that its forces are in Kherson and said the city is now once again under the control of Kiev. It warned Russian troops that have not yet withdrawn to surrender immediately. Russia claims that it has left no military hardware or unit behind.
The transfer of Russian troop units to the left bank of the Dnipro River was completed at 5 a.m. Moscow time today. Not a single piece of the military hardware was left on the right bank. All Russian service personnel crossed to the left bank of the Dnipro River.
Igor Konashenko, also added that Russia has helped all civilians who wanted to leave the region cross the Dnipro River. He said Ukraine had been trying to impede the transfer of civilians and the location of the relocation of troops. He claimed that Ukraine had launched 5 missile strikes using U.S.-supplied HIMARS rocket systems. Earlier, Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov clarified that the withdrawal of troops does not change the status of Kherson for Russia. Kherson is one of the 4 regions annexed by Russia after referendums to join it were held in September. Ukraine has been trying to take back these regions by launching counteroffensives during recent weeks. Our correspondent in Crimea, Johnny Miller, explains why Russia has withdrawn from Ukraine's Kherson.
The Dnipro River runs essentially from Zaporozhye, or north of that, Zaporozhye, down through Kherson, out through the Black Sea. It very much cuts that part of Ukraine in half, and the Russians control below the river, Ukrainians below control above the river. So if you want to understand why Russia is withdrawn from Kherson, in layman's terms, you just have to look at a map, and Kherson is on the west bank, the northern bank, if you will, of that river. And so, obviously, retreating from behind to the other side of the river allows them to hold the defensive line. Of course, it's going to be very difficult for Ukraine to make any advances over that river. You have to build bridges. They could be easily taken out. So, especially as winter is coming, it's difficult to see how Ukraine can make more advances. If there was a peaceful negotiation about to start, that river would make quite an interesting border. If borders are to be redrawn, it's a natural border. In the south and the east, of course, huge amounts of Russians. So if peace negotiations start, we could well see new borders driven drawn along that river. But as your other guest is saying, that the peace negotiations do seem a long way off, and they very much will be decided on the will, particularly of the Europeans, whether they want to start questioning whether supporting Ukraine, arming Ukraine, is really in the interests of European people.
Professor of Political Science Glenn Dlesen explains why Russia has decided to withdraw its forces from Kherson.
It has its advantages and its disadvantages. The disadvantage is obviously that they lose a key city which Russia has recognized as its own territory. So withdrawing effectively from its own territory is obviously seen as a weakness. And also this forestalls any possible conquering of Nikolaev and Odessa to the west, which many had expected. But it could also argue to be a sound decision because the main problem was in this area, the Russians were not sitting in a very good position. Again, this is a war of attrition. They're trying to weaken each other. So Russia is always trying to find positions where its own troops are protected while it can inflict more damage on the Ukrainian troops. This is also why Russia withdraws, it's usually because the Ukrainians go into a rain of artillery fire, and by the time they reach the Russian troops, they pull back. So they have previously given up territory to improve the manpower, so preserving their soldiers and military equipment while the Ukrainians are losing theirs.
Tensions between Italy and France continue to rise over the fate of a ship carrying hundreds of migrants.
90,000 persone, poco meno.
What is it that made France so angry? Does it make them angry that Italy must be the only possible port for migrant disembarkation in the Mediterranean? Because this is not written in any agreement.
Meloni was criticizing the French reaction to Italy's refusal to allow the charity ship that was stranded in the Mediterranean to dock at its port. She described it as incomprehensible and unjustified. France accepted the ship on Friday, but after warning Italy of severe consequences, the French government on Thursday said it would halt plans to take in over 3,000 migrants already in Italy in a tit-for-tat move. Italy has been increasingly frustrated with having to take in the bulk of migrants picked up after trying to reach Europe from North Africa. The Italian Prime Minister slammed the European Union's handling of the issue. She urged the bloc to do more to defend its borders. The nonstop years-long use of pellet weapons to quell anti-India protests in India-administered Kashmir is taking its toll on the victims, especially those who were hit in the eyes. Our correspondent, Shahanabad, reports on that.
recent study published in the Indian Journal of Ophthalmology reveals that a large number of those who sustained eye injuries due to the use of pellet guns in the mainstay of Srinagar between July and November 2016 have suffered some degree of vision loss. The survey conducted on 777 eye operations during the period reveals 80% of the victims have vision limited to counting fingers. 35-year-old Arshid Ahmed, a student of arts, was hit by pellets in both eyes in October 2016. 6 years on, Arshid says his vision of higher studies diminished just like his eyesight.
Initially, I thought things might get better after the operation, but as time passed, it started to get worse. The most hurtful thing for me is that I am dependent. I feel I'm a burden. How long will my family be able to support me?
Arshid's family was more fearful than hesitant to talk, and convincing Arshid to speak to Press TV about his condition was no less than a Herculean task.
I am often confined to my room. Darkness is my future. Although the government has bragged about rehabilitation and support for pellet victims, we're left to helplessness and nothing else. And speaking about my helplessness has now become a crime.
Before the abrogation of Kashmir's special status in 2019, New Delhi used shotguns for almost a decade to quell anti-India demonstrations in Indian-administered Kashmir, resulting in thousands of pellet injuries and the epidemic of vision loss in the region. Following the abrogation of Kashmir's special status in August 2019, people here might be upset about many things changing in the region. However, a remarkable achievement for government forces is that not even a single pellet gun has been used in the region following a tough crackdown on protesters. Kashmir has been a bone of contention between India and Pakistan for decades. Both lay claims to the region but rule it in parts. India regards Kashmir as an integral part of its territory. Meanwhile, analysts say since the abrogation of Kashmir's special status, New Delhi seems to own everything in Kashmir except the problems of its people. Shahana Bhatt, Indian-administered Kashmir.
That's a wrap for now. Bye, everybody.
Voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Path towards enlightenment.
In the name of God, the All Compassionate, the All Merciful. Salam and welcome to another episode of our weekly series titled Path Towards Enlightenment, which is an endeavor to make you and us familiar with an easy and fluent explanation of God's final scripture to all mankind, the Noble Quran, that was revealed to the last and greatest of all messengers, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. As you know, we have embarked on explanation of Surah Hashr, which is number 59 in the serial order of compilation of the Noble Quran. It has 24 ayahs and was revealed in Medina. Its name is derived from the second ayah, which mentions the word Hashr, which does not, however, denote the gathering on the Day of Resurrection, but it connotes people's gathering for migration. The surah opens and closes with the glorification of God Almighty by all that is in the role of existence. It mainly refers to the collaboration of the Arab hypocrites with the Israelite tribes in Medina against the Muslims, and the banishment of the Jewish tribe of Banu Nadir for its breaking of the agreement with the Prophet. The Almighty Creator says that the joint stratagems of the hypocrites and the rebellious Israelites lead to nothing but their humiliation and defeat. We start from where we left you last Friday, and here are ayahs 11, 12, and 13.
ألم تر إلى الذين نافقوا يقولون لإخوانهم الذين كفروا من أهل الكتاب لئن أخرجتم لنخرجن معكم ولا نطيع فيكم أحدا أبدا وإن قتلتم لننصرنكم والله يشهد إنهم لكاذبون لئن أخرجوا لا يخرجون معهم ولئن قوتلوا لا ينصرونهم ولئن نصروهم ليولن الأدبار ثم لا ينصرون لأنتم أشد رهبة في صدورهم من الله ذلك بأنهم قوم لا يفقهون.
Have you not regarded the hypocrites who say to their brethren, the faithless from among the people of the book, if you are expelled, we will surely go out with you, and we will never obey anyone against you, and if you are fought against, we will surely help you. And Allah bears witness that they are indeed liars. Surely, if they were expelled, they would not go out with them. And if they were fought against, they would not help them. And even if they were to help them, they would surely turn their backs to flee, and then they would not be helped. Indeed, they have a greater awe of you in their hearts than of Allah. That is because they are a lot who do not understand. If you might recall, last week, in our explanation of the previous ayahs of Surah Hashr, we said the boundaries of time and place are not important in religious brotherhood, and it is the duty of believers to assist their brethren in faith who have been displaced from homes and to help them settle in the new land. We also said that it is faith in God and removal of all negative attitudes from the hearts that makes a person deserving of divine mercy and kindness. Hence, sins are forgiven when repentance in the divine court is earnest and sincere. The ayahs which we now recited refer to the hypocrites and disbelievers who profess unity against believers. But when action is required, they are too timid to come out in the field. It happened that when the Prophet ordered the Israelite tribes to leave Medina for their breach of the Pact of Neutrality, a group of Arab hypocrites who outwardly paid lip service to Islam but were disbelievers at heart sent a message telling them to prepare for battle against Muslims. These hypocrites promised to fight along with the Israelites against Muslims, and in case of suffering defeat, to leave Medina in company of those being expelled. The hypocrites were led by Ibn Ubay and Ibn Nabtal. Here, the Noble Quran is explicitly saying that God Almighty bears witness that the hypocrites are liars and will not keep their promise. Thus, when the Israelites had no other choice but to leave, the Arab hypocrites neither supported them nor left Medina along with them. From these ayahs, we learn that, number one, the faithful are brothers of each other, while the hypocrites profess brotherhood with the faithless and with the enemies of Islam. Number two, lies, deceit, and cowardliness are among the main features of the hypocrites. Number three, a believer should not fear the deceptive and disappointing words of the hypocrites, whose main intention is to demoralize the true Muslims. And number four, being afraid of people rather than of Allah is an explicit sign of hypocrisy. Now we invite you to listen to ayahs 14 and 15 of the same surah.
لا يقاتلونكم جميعا إلا في قرى محصنة أو من وراء جدر بأسهم بينهم شديد تحسبهم جميعا وقلوبهم شتى ذلك بأنهم قوم لا يعقلون كمثل الذين من قبلهم قريبا ذاقوا وبال أمرهم ولهم عذاب أليم.
They will not fight against you together except in fortified townships or from behind walls. Their might is great amongst themselves. You suppose them to be united, but their hearts are disunited. That is because they are a lot who do not apply reason. Just like those who tasted the evil consequences of their deeds recently before them, and there is a painful punishment for them. These ayahs mean to say the hypocrites are so afraid of the believers that in case of confrontation, they hide behind walls and wage war against them from fortified places. Muslims might think the hypocrites are united amongst themselves, but the fact is that they're not, and have deep differences with each other because of their basic ignorance of truth and realities. True believers are cautioned against cooperation with the hypocrites, since this would mean falling to deception, which entails torment in life and terrible punishment in the hereafter. Thus, those who go astray taste the bitter consequences of their error, similar to the fate of the disbelievers and hypocrites of the past, which means favorable and unfavorable things are the consequences of our own deeds. These ayahs teach us the following points. Number one, if the true believers with trust in God stand united against the enemies, the Almighty will cast fear in the hearts of enemies, making them retreat or surrender. Number two, superficial and outward unity among the different groups of hypocrites and disbelievers will not last long, since real unity is based on divine values. And number three, the fate of the past nations should serve as admonishment for us and for the coming generations. In conclusion of this week's episode of Path Towards Enlightenment, here are ayahs 16 and 17 of Surah Hashr.
كمثل الشيطان إذ قال للإنسان اكفر فلما كفر قال إني بريء منك إني أخاف الله رب العالمين فكان عاقبتهما أنهما في النار خالدين فيها وذلك جزاء الظالمين.
The hypocrites are like Satan when he tells mankind to disbelieve. When that person disbelieves, he says, "Indeed, I am absolved of you. Indeed, I fear Allah, the Lord of all the worlds." So the fate of both is that they will be in the fire, to remain in it forever. And such is the requital of the wrongdoers. Here, the believers are reminded of yet another attribute of the hypocrites, that is, they resemble Satan, who uses different designs to tempt people but does not keep his promise after people have gone astray by citing his own fears of the Almighty Creator of the universe. Ayah 17 refers to the fate of Satan and his followers, that is, they will abide in the fires of hell forever. These ayahs teach us that, number one, hypocrisy makes a person devilish to the extent that he or she embarks on deceiving others and trying in vain to escape the misery in which they have trapped themselves. Number two, the Satan and the hypocrites break promises by citing fear of God, which is actually a pretext to try to escape the dire consequences of their own evil deeds. And number three, the ever-deceiving Satan never gives up his temptations, while the hypocrites should be considered devils in human for their deceiving of simple-minded people.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhal ladheena amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis sabri was salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear audience of IRIB English Radio, now it's time to listen to a short speech by Sayyid Asad Jafari.
Cultivating an Islamic identity has been our ongoing topic. We're watching, you know, this anti-racism movement in the U.S. between the African-American community and the Caucasian community. And there's whole studies done on the idea that there are some individuals that belong to the minor race, the inferior race, the oppressed race. And after a while, when you face that oppression enough times, you begin to actually believe that, yes, they are the superior race. They are the superior color. We are the inferior color will never be them. And you take the external racism and you subconsciously now you begin to internalize it. You actually convince yourself that, yes, I'm African American, I'm a second class citizen. Subconsciously. And this inferiority complex kicks in. Now that has an immense impact on your identity, to the point where sometimes there are people who actually physically try to change their appearance. They'll bleach their skin. They'll straighten their hair. They'll change the way they talk. They'll get nose jobs to shrink their nose. I don't want any physical resemblance of the inferior race. I want to try to look like them so they can accept me. That's a huge issue right now. Now, that's internalized racism. Bring the exact same principle to internalized Islamophobia. There are some of us who have the exact same subconscious feelings inside of us. That when we look around the world right now, I talked about Afghanistan right now, and Yemen, and Palestine, and you see almost as if every Islamic nation, every Islamic group is under attack. How could it be that everybody is wrong and we're right? Why are we always the target? Now you come here, for example, a random family going for a walk in London, Ontario, and a tragic event happens. My Muhajjaba sisters, my warriors on the path, they have 1,000 stories of being ridiculed, tugged on, asked all sorts of weird questions, made fun of. After a while, it starts to seep in, and you start to think, maybe they're right, maybe we're wrong. And so the script flips. No longer is it the idea that I'm trying to export Islam, I'm trying to now remove Islam from me. So I'll do exactly what the race does. I'll start to not look the part. The hijab comes off, the beard comes down, I start to now develop the culture of the, you know, superior religion or superior lifestyle, which includes alcohol, which includes all sorts of stuff online, which includes adultery, which includes changing my name, which includes everything, even to the point where I won't wear anything resembling a Muslim outfit. Even my fashion sense will change. All because subconsciously now I believe that I am the inferior religion. There was a study done. Those of you who know Noor Kids, Amin Asir, his wife did an amazing study on this very issue of internalized Islamophobia. Now, I've been using the word subconscious over and over again because many might think, yeah, right, who thinks like that? You'd be surprised. Even my hijabi sisters, when they're getting ready, they have all sorts of discussions. Is this an okay outfit? Am I kind of, you know, am I able to maintain some form of fashion and then still follow the rules of God? Oh, may God bless them. It's not easy. Those are my sisters who are on the fence about hijab. Sometimes I think you guys think that those who wear hijab since they were 9 have it easy. No, every day it's a struggle. Every day it's a struggle. They might make it look easy, but it's not easy at all. Trying to balance somehow looking fashionable and still being covered is not easy. That's why a lot of the time the lines are blurred. And the study that she did is eye-opening. In America, and these are 5 to 9-year-olds. Kids. About this very issue of Islam. Now, she used dolls and, you know, the whole experience she did, but the results are astonishing. I read 3 sets of results. She writes that 1 in 2 kids, age 5 to 9, did not want to tell their classmates they were Muslim. 1 in 3 kids did not realize they could be American and Muslim at the exact same time. Now, when you don't understand the idea, that's why my very first discussion, which feels like years ago now, right? My very first discussion was about the prophets instilling the deen into a pre-existing culture. That was a very crucial foundational discussion. But it's astonishing. These kids didn't know. Can I call myself American Muslim? And one in six kids, she says, pretended they weren't Muslim. It's astonishing to me. To young kids. That's why it is vital in passing, I say, don't underestimate the power of having an Islamic identity in the home. And start them very, very young. These are clean slates in your home. Sometimes I wonder at some of our parents, and again, I also struggle with this, that there's no Islam in the home, there's no Islam outside of the home, and then there's complaints that bachcha jo hai na namaz padta na woh, where will he get these values from? It's not inside his four walls, it's not inside society, it's not online, it's not inside of him. What's the shock? Why are you shocked? Did you give him the tools? Did you sacrifice and compromise? Or was it a little bit of a pinch of this and a pinch of that? And, you know, a very gray religion, blurred lines, confusion, to the point where, forget it. And that starts from a very, very young age. You can't all of a sudden expect your daughter at 9 to wake up and want to wear hijab if the right work hasn't been done for the previous years. The study I'm talking about is from age 5 to 9. Imagine now a 17-year-old. How many times do we correct someone's pronunciation of my name? How many times do I engage in a debate about Islamic politics today? How many times do I sit there and do my best to answer properly when they ask me as a muhajjaba, why do you wear a hijab on your head? Because my mom says so. Because I have to. How many of us run from those situations? So the first barrier is an internalized Islamophobia inside of us, which plays with everything from our pride to our worship to our sense of community to everything. Anything that has a resemblance of Islam, we run from. Be it our own look, be it the four walls of a masjid, be it certain days of the year, that's it.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Rahi Karimun Adi Alimun Hali Hakimun Mati. شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف صبور مجيد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمن
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. English Radio.
In the limelight.
There is no end in sight regarding the cost of living crisis in Europe. This continent was doomed to decline after the 2008 global financial recession. In this regard, we have taken a look at some world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. According to RT, Germany's gas storage facilities may rapidly become depleted if the weather turns cold. Klaus Müller, the head of Germany's Federal Network Agency, said in an interview with Der Spiegel, published recently. Müller told the outlet, "A few freezing cold days are enough for a dramatic increase in gas consumption. We know from historical data that when it gets really frosty, the storage tanks are quickly drained." The official added that Germany can get through the winter, but only if both citizens and industries join efforts to end lower gas consumption by at least 20%. Last month, the country's industries were able to lower consumption by 20%, and private households and businesses did even better with 42%, he said, noting, however, that this had to do with the warm weather and might change in the event of a cold snap. As of November 2nd, Germany's gas storage facilities were 99.3% full, which, according to Müller, is enough to keep the country going for up to 10 weeks as the only source of gas. Germany, along with other EU states, has been gradually reducing its reliance on Russian energy supplies. According to Foreign Minister Annalena Baerbock, the share of Russian gas among the country's energy imports recently dropped to 6-8%, while in 2021, more than half of Germany's gas supply came from Russia. To make up for the loss, Berlin has focused on building liquefied natural gas terminals. The country will have two floating regasification for receiving seaborne LNG by the end of the year, and two more by May 2023, the authorities claimed. Their total annual capacity is estimated at 33 billion cubic meters of natural gas. Also, RT reported, France's largest glass manufacturer, Duralex, has suspended operations for 5 months due to soaring electricity prices. The company's CEO, José Luis Lacana, told BFM TV channel recently, "Our gas and electricity bills have risen from 3 to 13 million euros a year. The price of energy usually represents 5% to 7% of our turnover. Today, it is around 46%. It is not tenable," he explained, adding that the company's operation had become non-viable as it is unable to make a profit after such a staggering outlays for energy, in addition to paying salaries and procuring raw materials. He added that during the five-month closure, Duralex employees would continue to receive 95% of their salaries, 70% of which will be covered by the state. The head of the company noted, however, that its warehouses are currently sufficiently stocked to survive the winter and not cause a shortage of its goods on the market. Earlier, France's largest aluminum smelter, Aluminium Dunkerque, said it would cut production by about 20% due to rising energy prices. Another glass manufacturer, Arc, also said it would lower output and move a number of employees to part-time work. Meanwhile, Bloomberg wrote, The European Union is trying to determine whether it's feasible to use the assets of the Russian Central Bank that have been frozen by member states to finance Ukraine, Bloomberg reported recently. The discussions are at an early stage, and legal experts have been asked to look into possible options, the outlet wrote, citing people familiar with the matter. Some $300 billion belonging to the Russian Central Bank were frozen by the EU, the US, and their allies as part of anti-Russia sanctions. Any EU action would deal with assets held in Europe, Bloomberg says, adding that the last month, European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen said that the EU wanted to confiscate Russian assets in order to use them for the reconstruction of Ukraine, but admitted that establishing a legal base for such a move was tricky. U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen said in May that seizing the assets was not something legally permissible in the United States. Russia strongly criticized the freezing of funds, with Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov accusing the West of essentially committing theft.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird Eutelsat 3B and Iran Sat or Bat 5 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Faith through action. Sunday, the 5th of Ramadan, 1394, the 22nd of September, 1974. God chose the people best prepared for His most important mission. If you look amongst yourselves, you will see that one of you looks more determined in appearance, stronger in physique, and more healthy looking in complexion. His hand is stronger, his arms are more powerful, his chest is broader. You'd ask that guy to help you carry a heavy load. You'd choose him for this task, and he'd probably rush to help too. So, if he was chosen, if he could undertake this task, meaning if he wanted to do it, because he definitely could do it, if he decided that he would carry this load, then he would stand out from his peers. You would say, poor guy, no one else could do it, so we didn't ask them. Instead, we asked you. When Allah chose the nation of Islam or the Israelites, it was in this sense. At their own time, the Israelites and the Muslims were the most able people to bear the responsibility of the divine mission of leading and guiding mankind. This is why Allah entrusted them with this mission. Did they bear it faithfully or not? If they did, they would have carried this trust to its destination, and they would have been the best and most worthy of the Muslims. But if they didn't, then what? If they didn't, then they are in the same situation as the Israelites, who did not fulfill the trust that Allah placed in them. So they were struck with abasement and poverty, and they earned God's wrath. The Quran, Surah 2, verse 61. This is in this world, and their refuge is hell. This is in the hereafter.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
He chose you to bear this responsibility and has not placed for you any obstacle in the religion. He has not created any difficulty or hardship in the religion for you. This responsibility is not excessively burdensome. Being chosen is not a punishment. You are capable of bearing this duty. The faith of your father, Ibrahim. This is the same faith as that of Ibrahim. He named you Muslims before and now. This refers to Ibrahim's supplication in Surah Baqarah, and from our progeny a nation submissive to you. The Quran, Surah 2, verse 128. So God is saying that He gave them this name before and also now. Why? For what reason? In order that you do what? So that the apostle may be a witness to you, and that you may be witnesses to mankind. So that the prophet will be responsible for you, and you will be responsible for mankind. So that the prophet watches over you and witnesses what you do, and so that you will watch over mankind and witness what they do.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.